Like to welcome everyone this evening and thank you for your coming this evening, and thank you for your interest in this project and the future of Cayucas. First I'd like to introduce a few people. Start with Supervisor Gibson. If you'd like to stand and be recognized, thank you for being here. We appreciate it. We hope they applaud when you go to the polls, too, right?
Maybe when I leave.
You never know. I'd like to also introduce our staff, our district manager, Rick Kuhn, here to my left. Next to Rick is Danielle Crawford, who's our glue that keeps our entire district together. Next to Danielle is our legal counsel, Tim Carmel. Next to Tim is Dan Heimel. He's with Water Systems Consulting. I always have to think about that. And next to Dan is David Foote with Firma. And these are the two gentlemen at the end of the table here, the ones that have done all the homework for us. I'd also like to introduce Lindsay Corica. And she's here in the front, and she's the assistant with David Foote. So if I've missed anybody, please let me know right now. If not, we'll start with calling the meeting to order and ask Danielle to do the roll call, please.
Good evening. President Enns.
Here.
Vice President Chivins.
Here.
Director Lyon. Director Maffioli.
Here.
Director Lloyd.
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, I'd also like to point out that we are recording the meeting tonight. AGP is here. Thank you very much for being here. And you will be able to see if I can get this right. You'll be able to watch this presentation on channel 21 on your television. Copies of the meeting will be available through the CSD, the Cayucas Sanitary District office, at your request. Also, it's available by the audio portion of this meeting is available through a website. It's slo-span.org. So if you're interested in listening to the audio portion, you can do it that way. So with that, I'm going to open the meeting to public comment. These are four items not on tonight's agenda. Public comment for items on the agenda will be taken at the time we discuss those items on the agenda. So if anyone has anything, comments they'd like to make on items not on the agenda, now would be the time to come to the microphone.
Hi, my name is Becky Barkley, and I live on Old Creek Road. Regarding a water treatment facility, it would be great if we could do composting, because we have to do something with the solids, and I'm aware that when it is full of water, it is very heavy, and it uses a lot more trucks to take it to a dump or what have you. So hopefully we can compost it and use it locally, and if not, we can compost it, have less trucks, and send it inland for agriculture. Thank you.
Thank you, Becky. Anyone else? Seeing no one else, I'll close public comment. We have a couple of business items we need to take care of here with the district. It won't take very long, and then we'll get right to the subject of tonight's meeting. First, we have a consent calendar. Does anyone wish to pull anything for separate discussion? Seeing none, a motion would be in order for approval of the consent calendar.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
Motion by Dan Lloyd, Director Lloyd, and second by Dan Chivins. Any other discussion? Seeing none, Danielle, if you do the roll call vote, please.
Director Lloyd?
Yes.
Director Chivins?
Yes.
Director Mafioli?
Yes.
President Enns?
Yes. All right, thank you. Next is staff communications. Item number four. 4A is our district manager's report. Rick, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. We started last October with ACH withdrawals, direct withdrawals from our bank to the customers. We have 191 people now that have signed up. Every month we get a few more trickling in, so that's going well. The big thing is that we've, as I said before, we rented a 6-inch pump to have in case we have El Nino, if it ever occurs. So we are ready to have emergency power or emergency pumping power if we need it throughout the district. And the big news is that we have applied for and received a $75,000 planning grant from the State Water Resources Control Board. So those monies have been, documents are signed, and those monies are made available for Cayucas to go with the planning, towards the planning of our project. So
very good.
That's all I have.
Okay, any questions of Rick from our board? Seeing none. This is no action required item, so we will look at any questions on items 4B, C, items 4B or C. Seeing none, we'll move on to tonight's presentation by WSC and FIRMA on the comparative analysis for the Cayucas Sustainable Water Project. We'll start with our manager, Rick Kuhn.
Well, good evening. We have here just a brief recap of how we got here, the principles that were important to us. Those principles, there's a handout at the back podium that's available. It has some acronyms on it, and then on the reverse side it has the project charter that you can read. So how did we get here? We got here through talking about community sustainability. That means making our resources available in the long term for the community, specifically the recycled reclaimed water from a wastewater treatment facility. That was very important for the community and the board to have that option available for the future. We've also talked about the ownership, having ownership in a facility like we do now at the existing plant. We own 35% of the facility and the land. This was very important, so we looked at that. And then also local governance, being able to run the plant and set the rates, not as a customer base, but as overall for the community and how we operate the plant. So this is how we got here. This shows what we've done. We started back in June of 2015, this process. This process first looked at these items in orange, establishing a program charter, beneficial use analysis, wastewater characterization, siting analysis, funding and financing strategy, and wastewater collection system evaluation. If you were at the last town hall meeting, we actually went over all these in orange, and then we started here in the green, the comparative analysis. We're here now at the very end of the comparative analysis, and we're going to present that tonight. So just a quick overview of the comparative analysis. We looked at the siting evaluations. We looked at the conceptual alternatives, basically how to reuse the water. We established some evaluation criteria, and then we have a summary of the comparative analysis and then the next steps. So I'll turn it over to David. I'll pass it.
Thank you, Rick. Mr. President, board members,
The project team identified 12 candidate sites for consideration as a rough screening starting point. These are located in the Three Creek Valleys. You can see on this map, the pink area is the community and the service area, basically, for the district. The orange line is Highway 1. The pink line inland is the coastal zone boundary. And then you can see the Three Creek Valleys with their Whale Rock in the blue. So these 12 sites were selected based on three criteria: that they are in a creek valley with the potential for reuse of reclaimed water for agriculture. They're outside the flood zone, related to the creeks, outside the coastal zone, and not visible from Highway 1. We applied four more criteria and winnowed the list down to these five. The first being, was there an interested property owner? The second being, does the site have a unique opportunity to fulfill project objectives? Thirdly, the relative proximity to existing infrastructure, and that dropped out some of the more remote sites. And then lastly, is the site of a suitable slope and proportion? Can we create a public lot on a reasonable slope? And that dropped out a few of the sites. The next step was to take each of these five candidate sites and evaluate them further for these four topics, reading from the left side vertically, is geologic hazard, biological resources, cultural resources, and agriculture. So the five sites are along the top, and reading left to right from geology, you can see that all of the sites but one have just a minor constraints due to geology and soils. One of the sites, number four, has a potentially active landslide and a fault running through it. Reading from biological resources, all of the sites, being in the creek valley, have proximity to creeks, and those creeks have species of concern in them. So all of the sites have some issues related to biological resources, but they aren't serious constraints. Two of the sites are going to need to potentially cross one of the creeks, so they have access issues. And then one site, number two, has a little bit of native grassland that would need to be protected. Moving down to cultural resources, two of the sites were determined through record search and a surface survey to likely not need any further action. Three of the sites will likely need construction monitoring for cultural resources. So these constraints are not considered severe or severely constraining. On the bottom, related to agriculture, we have two sites with prime soils and two sites with grazing. The prime soils are a constraint. If we converted the prime ag land to another use, we would need to mitigate for that. Site number one, the property is in an agricultural preserve or a land contract, and this was determined to actually be a nearly insurmountable constraint. As a result, we winnowed that down, if I can make this thing work. We winnowed that down and set that site aside. That leaving these four, we then took a little closer look at site four with the constraints in geology and determined that site, all things considered, compared to the others, with another viable site in Toro Creek, we decided to eliminate from consideration that site also, so number four. Leaving these three, you can see the color coding, I should note, green meaning the very least constraint, yellow meaning somewhat more, needing some mitigation. So you can see this cluster of sites is relatively suitable for the use, at least at the level that we have analyzed these four topics at this point. So that leaves us with the final three. And as I mentioned, the results of the technical studies got us down to these three sites, one in each creek valley. As we showed at the last town hall meeting, we created some kind of rudimentary digital models of a wastewater plant with buildings and the different things that go in them, and we place these facilities at a very conceptual level onto each site and then showed landscape that's starting to mature around them to give you a sense of the scale of this facility, what it might look like in each context. So down in the right corner, you can see an oblique aerial of each site, this one being Cayucas Creek. And because of the slope of this site, the facility is a little closer to the road than perhaps some of the other ones. This is site three. In the oblique aerial, you have Old Creek Road, and you can see a little bit of Whale Rock Reservoir. It comes through black in this aerial. And Montecito Road, a fork in the road there, and that's the site, and that's how it would be situated as viewed from Old Creek Road. Last, in Toro Creek Valley, this is the way the facility would look on that portion. That concludes the overview of our process to evaluate these sites and move them through the comparative analysis. Are there any questions that the board has about that segment of this?
Are there any questions from the board? I don't want you to think our board's asleep. This is just a review of everything that we discussed at our last meeting. If you were here, then you've seen this as well. And so we've spent some time looking at this and working with David on it. And so if you don't see any questions here, it's because we've been doing our homework. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Dan Heimel. And Dan will talk about some more of the technical details of what we're doing.
Thanks, Robert. So this slide gives us an overview of what we're calling the comparative analysis. So for each of the three sites that were selected based on the criteria that David just described, we then looked at the opportunities at that site for disposal of the wastewater and for potential beneficial reuse or recycled water. So each site was evaluated for a disposal-only option, so flow, all the flow being conveyed to the outfall. It was also looked at for the potential for agricultural irrigation. We also evaluated what we call indirect potable reuse opportunities, the potential to use highly treated, highly purified water for groundwater recharge and extraction, and also surface water augmentation. And then finally, we looked at opportunities for direct potable reuse. So the goal was to look at each of these sites, not just for their potential to dispose of the wastewater, but how each site would measure up for future beneficial reuse opportunities. And that was done for each of the three valleys. So each one of those alternatives that I just described was really comprised of four components. First, we looked at what are the modifications to the collection system that would be required to convey the wastewater to that site. And if you were at the last town hall meeting, we showed some maps, and we'll show some later in this presentation about the collection system modifications. Then we also looked at the treatment facility that would be required to treat the wastewater from the community's collection system, and also the level of treatment that would be required for the type of beneficial reuse that was being investigated. We looked at the outfall disposal infrastructure requirements. Once the water's been treated, how do we get it back to the outfall? And then finally, the beneficial use or recycled water opportunities. And so here we'll go through a series of maps that really outline these different alternatives. This first map is the figure developed for the Cayucas Creek alternative. And sort of the big takeaway on this map is shown in blue and sort of bright green are the collection system and effluent pipeline modifications that would be required to utilize the Cayucas Creek site. And so you can see you would have to pump wastewater all the way from the southern part of the collection system where it naturally flows all the way to Cayucas Creek, and then a new pipeline to convey it back to the outfall would need to be constructed. For Cayucas Creek, we also then looked at the opportunities for ag irrigation. So shown here in the purple shading near the wastewater plant was just a conceptual area that could be irrigated with tertiary treated water from the wastewater plant. Now, this isn't designed to be the only solution for aggregation. There, you could be conveyed to other portions of Cayucas Creek Valley as needed, but we just wanted to pick one conceptual alternative for the comparative analysis. We also then looked at conveyance required for groundwater recharge. So a pipeline to convey advanced purified water to the Old Creek Basin below the Whale Rock Dam. We analyzed opportunities to convey advanced purified water to Whale Rock Reservoir for surface water augmentation. And then finally, opportunities for direct potable reuse, or the conveyance of advanced treated water to the existing surface water plant by the cemetery. Then, switching gears, we looked at the Willow Creek alternatives. This, again, is an overview map of the collection system requirements that would be necessary to convey the wastewater to the Willow Creek site and then back to the outfall. We, again, looked at ag irrigation opportunities. Again, these are shown on the parcel where the site was being evaluated. However, opportunities for other ag irrigation would be possible. We looked at the conveyance that would be needed for groundwater recharge and extraction at the same location in Old Creek. Part of the phase one task, as Rick described earlier, was a hydrogeologic evaluation. And that evaluation identified that the Old Creek Valley was the most suitable location for groundwater recharge and extraction. We also then looked at surface water augmentation. And one of the things to note here is, given the close proximity of Whale Rock Reservoir to the Willow Creek site, less pipe translates to less cost for surface water augmentation. And then again, delivery to the surface water treatment plant for direct potable reuse. And then finally, for the Toro Creek alternative, this is again an overview map that highlights the collection system modifications. I think the takeaway here is, you know, the limited amount of pipe that would be required to convey from the existing collection system to the wastewater site and then back to the outfall. Again, agriculture irrigation of nearby parcels. Groundwater recharge and extraction opportunities, again, below Whale Rock Reservoir. Surface water augmentation with delivery up to Whale Rock Reservoir. And you can note the pretty significant amount of pipeline that would require. And then direct potable reuse for Toro Creek as well. So I think at this point, we'd open it back up to the board, see if there were any questions about that portion of the presentation.
Thank you, Dan. Questions from the board?
Yeah, that was a good job, you guys. Can you explain, just for the benefit of the public, the grant options and how they pertain to the different facets of the, you know, potable reuse, et cetera?
Yeah. One of the key factors in evaluating the recycled water and potable reuse opportunities is the availability of grant funding. There are numerous programs. We described several of them in the last town hall meeting that provide funding for recycled water programs. Recycled water has been identified by the State Water Resource Control Board as one of their highest priorities for the future of California's water resources, and a lot of money has been made available to help fund those programs. And so
this is why we looked at the purple lines on here. It really boils down to length of pipelines as we go through this process and we look at it. So there's an actual grant out there right now, 35% of the project total, up to $15 million for recycled water opportunities. So that was a big thing why we looked at recycled water opportunities for the community sustainability long term.
Any other questions?
I don't have any.
Yeah.
Myself, no. Go ahead.
Carrie?
Yes. On the outfall for the water, where is that going to be going exactly? Is it out to where the current location is with Morro Bay, or is there going to be another outfall? into the ocean?
It's using our portion of our that we own of the existing outfall.
Okay.
So remember, we have a dedicated line that goes through. It's a force main right now all the way to Island Street, and then it's gravity, so we would have to make that a force main the rest of the way to Atascadero Road to tie in.
We'll have a public comment moment here in just a second. Dan? Dan Lloyd?
No, my mic's on. I'm not talking.
All right. Just a couple things, Dan Heimel. One, I'm not sure everyone knows when you spoke of Old Creek Valley that's filled up with a reservoir, but could you just point out a couple things there? One is where that surface water augmentation was or the direct and water injection, and also you mentioned the direct potable return to the existing treatment plant, and I just wanted to be sure that everybody knew where those were.
Yeah, that's a good point. So this site 3 is we're calling the Willow Creek alternative, but is located near Old Creek Road, and so that. To clarify, so Old Creek runs along here, and so when I'm referring to Old Creek, I'm referring to that area. But in Old Creek, that's where we identified the best opportunities for groundwater recharge and extraction. That area was used previously to percolate water from Whale Rock Reservoir. And then I think to your second question about surface water augmentation, so this would be a conceptual layout for surface water. So that water would be treated using an advanced treatment process and then could be conveyed into Whale Rock Reservoir. The regulations for this type of beneficial reuse are still being developed, but should be finalized or at least further developed at the end of 2016. So it's coming as a potential option. And then I think the last part was about direct potable reuse. So this concept shows a pipeline that could potentially run to the existing surface water treatment plant without the need to go into the ground or into a reservoir first.
Very good. Okay, thank you, Dan. Any other questions from the board? Any other questions, Rick? Comments before I open it to the public?
So each of the alternatives that we described was evaluated using two different types of criteria. We looked at qualitative non-economic criteria, and then we looked at qualitative or what we're calling an economic analysis, where we analyze capital cost, O&M costs, and then what we call recycled water unit cost, or the dollars per acre foot of the water that could be produced from one of these concepts. For the qualitative non-economic criteria that were identified by the project team were consistency with the project charter. And as Rick mentioned, there's a handout with the project charter on the back of it, in the back of the room. Hopefully everybody had a chance to grab one of those. Site constraints. These really come from the work that David and his team did on the technical studies for the different sites. And then we also looked at permitting complexity, construction complexity and duration, and then operational complexity were the qualitative non-economic criteria that were evaluated. And so using those criteria, we used a scoring system from 1 to 3, with 3 being the least constrained or the least complex or a better score. And so if we start with the first category, consistency with the project charter, we determined that all of the sites really met the objectives of the project charter in terms of providing ownership and a sustainable resource for the community. The second category was site constraints, and as David reviewed, the site constraints identified Cayucas Creek as scoring slightly higher than the others, primarily related to 2 aspects. The Cayucas The Old Creek, Willow Creek alternative required crossing a creek potentially to convey the wastewater to that site, and so that could have potential additional environmental impacts. And then the Toro Creek site being evaluated was located in potentially in proximity to cultural resources. So those were the two things that sort of changed the scoring for that category. Then under permitting complexity, this was Cayucas Creek scored a 1 or the lowest score, Willow Creek a 2, and Toro Creek a 3. And this is primarily associated with just the miles of pipeline that would be required to convey the wastewater to and from the Cayucas Creek site. That also played into the scoring for construction complexity and duration, just the again, the infrastructure required to get it to Cayucas Creek. And then, and finally, operationally, the more water you got to move and pump, the more complex it is, the more difficult it is to manage. And so if you add up all those scores, Cayucas Creek scores a 9, Willis Creek scores in the middle with 11, and Toro Creek scores has the highest score, or is the most suitable based on this criteria for the facility, with a score of 14. The second component of the alternatives evaluation was the economic analysis. And so this, we had really four main categories: capital costs, what's it cost to design and build the facility, operation and maintenance, you know, what are the annual ongoing operation and maintenance costs, recycled water / beneficial yield, so how much water could the beneficial use concepts that were described previously, how much could they yield for the community, and then the unit cost, which really combines the previous three elements in terms of what does it cost to generate that amount of yield. And so just as a note, we're going to, as we move into the next slides that show the capital cost estimates for these different alternatives, these cost estimates at this point are preliminary, and they're really only intended to be used for relative comparisons of the different sites that we evaluated in the comparative analysis. So this next slide, we start with the capital costs for each of the three alternatives. And we broke it down into really three different categories. So if we start on the left-hand column, we're just looking at disposal to outfall at this point. So this would be a tertiary system that would treat and dispose of all the water through the existing outfall in Morro Bay. And so the treatment costs, that we broke that down into treatment plant costs, collection system modification costs, and then conveyance to outfall costs, as we described previously. So the treatment plant costs would be approximately $14 million, and they're the same for all three sites, as that treatment plant would be treating the same wastewater stream, both in terms of flow and quality. Where you start to see the difference in overall costs is the collection system modifications. With Cayucas Creek, because of that additional pipeline required to convey the wastewater to the site, the estimate for collection system modification infrastructure is approximately $7 million, whereas you compare that with the Toro Creek site, it's only $1.6 million. And then this additionally comes through when you look at the conveyance to outfall costs. For Cayucas Creek, the costs are approximately $9.1 million. However, when you look at the outfall costs for the Toro Creek site, they come out at $3.3 million. So those costs are then subtotaled, and then indirect costs are added. So indirect costs, or sometimes called soft costs, include design, permitting, construction management, legal, admin, other costs associated with the delivery of the project. We then looked at, that first table was to build a plant to convey the water back through the outfall, but there's no beneficial use component. So then we looked at what would it cost to add potential ag irrigation. So we evaluated the additional costs for constructing recycled water pumps, a recycled water storage tank, and some limited recycled water pipeline to serve tertiary treated water for agricultural irrigation. And those costs come out to approximately $1.4 million by the time you add in the indirect costs. And and then lead to a range of approximately 26.2 to 41.7. So with these costs, the big take, up to this point, Toro Creek is on the low end, Willow Creek is in the middle, and then Cayucas Creek is on the high end in terms of capital costs. And then the final component of the capital cost announcement was to look at these opportunities for potable reuse. As we described earlier, potable reuse could either come in the form of groundwater recharge and extraction, surface water augmentation, or direct potable reuse. And so those three different alternatives were used to generate the range of costs shown in the bottom table. And again, similar to the table at the top, the treatment plant costs were assumed to be the same because you'd be treating the same wastewater stream just to a higher standard for potable reuse. But if you look at the recycled water infrastructure costs, you see where the differences start to become evident. And what you see is for the Willow Creek site had the lowest incremental cost for potable reuse or recycled water. And this is primarily driven by its proximity to Whale Rock Reservoir, the Old Creek groundwater basin, and then the existing surface water treatment plant. So so when you add all those in, you get a range for Toro Creek of about $34 million, Willow Creek from 38-39 to 40 million, and then Cayucas Creek at 48-49. And we should caveat that, but these total costs include full advanced treatment and recycled water for potable reuse. The cost shown in the top table could convey the water and meet the requirements of the regional board, but these additional costs, and I think as Dan brought up, are tied to the opportunity to obtain grant funding associated with recycled water projects. And so even though there may be an additional cost with these different additional treatment levels and potable reuse alternatives, it opens you up for the eligibility for grant funding that could potentially reduce the total project cost, the burden on the community, and provide water supply benefit. The next component of the economic analysis was looking at the beneficial use, and I'll go pretty quickly through this one, but really what we wanted to convert was the capital costs and the O&M costs into a unit cost or dollars per acre foot of the water so that you can compare it to other potential water supplies that the community may need to evaluate in the future. So you take the capital costs, convert that to a debt service, you add in the O&M, you get a total annual cost. You divide that by the yield, the amount of water available, and you come out with the unit cost for ag irrigation around $1,100, $1,200 an acre foot. And those are just the additional costs. And then we did the same for potable reuse alternatives, taking the additional capital costs and yields and coming down to a unit cost with a range from around $2,000 to $3,000 dollars per acre foot. So this range is similar to what we've seen for other projects that include potable reuse throughout California and are in the ballpark of other potential supplemental water supplies being evaluated by communities throughout the state. And so in summary, just to go back through the evaluation criteria, we should have the qualitative non-economic scoring with Cayucas Creek scoring the lowest, Willow Creek in the middle, and Toro Creek the highest. With just the cost to build the treatment plant and convey the wastewater to the plant and back to the outfall, the range is estimated around 24.8 for Toro Creek to 40.3 million. If you want to add in agriculture irrigation, there's an additional 1.4 million. And then potable reuse adds another between $5 to $8 million dollars to come up with the total project costs of somewhere, 33 to 48. But again, those are for full advanced treatment potable reuse projects. And then a summary of the unit costs. And so those are the findings that were developed from the comparative analysis, looking at the different sites and the different opportunities available at those sites and the costs associated with future potential beneficial reuse. The next steps for the project are, as Rick mentioned, to move into the facilities master plan, where it'll be included a more in-depth evaluation of the treatment alternatives. It'll include optimization of the collection system modifications, look at regulatory refinements, include development of more granular, refined cost estimates, continued more detailed evaluation of the sites, and then development of an implementation plan to take the project into construction. Additionally, in parallel, we'll be initiating the environmental impact report and the environmental analysis. It's envisioned that it'll be a scoping meeting, followed by an initial study, and then preparation of the draft EIR. And so I think at that point, give it back to the board for questions.
Okay, any questions from the board?
I have a question, please. Maybe this is either for Rick, Tim, and or Dan. Maybe you could help expand a little bit for the audience's demand that what is the legislative or regulatory mandate that we're now facing or all communities are facing relative to using recycled water into the future?
The regional board, it's mandated 35% by 2020, what are the dates, Tim? 2021? 2020. So
by 2020, they expect all local communities to be
able to use recycled water.
To what degree are we looking at purple pipe where you irrigate parks and landscaping irrigation, or you're looking for actual reuse, maybe agriculture? Is there a sliding scale? There's always the use of recycled water for your community areas, then there's recycled water for agriculture, and there's recycled water for direct potable reuse. So by 2020, are we looking for indirect potable reuse?
No, I think what we're doing is we're looking at indirect potable reuse almost right off the bat for us. Potable reuse, until they come out with the standards, we really don't know how it's going to, direct potable reuse, how it's going to plug in. We're in a situation where we don't have, baseball fields and golf courses to irrigate with, so we are going to go right into ag as a part of our components.
Yeah, and I think for the benefit of the audience, cost is directly related to the level of treatment. So what we've seen to this evening is the escalating cost to get the water purer for human consumption. And so we have a couple of options for that. One is the direct potable reuse, which is the highest option, which brings along with it the most expense, but also gives us the best opportunity for grant funding for offsetting those costs. So the two options that we have is, one, put it directly into whale rock, which ultimately is probably the most sustainable, gives us the highest quality and the most expense. Secondarily, injecting it into the ground and then pulling it out downstream and retreating it is the next likely option. And that has with it some more investigation that we need to do as part of our background research to just make sure that that is still a very viable option. And what Rick was talking about, too, relative to the standards not being set for direct potable reuse, there are a couple of bills that were passed by the legislature a couple of years ago that put in place a blue ribbon committee to establish standards for direct potable reuse. That is, to what level of treatment does this water need to be subjected to in order to make it safe? So they're meeting monthly in Sacramento, and they're forging forward on standards. Now, technically, they were supposed to have those ready for general consumption or review sometime in June of this year. We don't know if they're going to make that, but the ultimate goal is to have something before the legislature at the end of the year or right in that period. So we don't really know what that level of treatment is going to be, but based on technology and the way the industry is going, we have an idea, and that's how we've sort of identified our probable cost for that alternative. But yet I have to say at the moment it's not really defined. what's probably most important for us to recognize and remember in being members of Cayucas is that we have one source of water, and that one source of water is Whale Rock. We have an allotment that's allowed for the community based on agreements and contracts that is now our source. If we were to have to continue to experience drought, and even I'd say the last month of having no real rain here in an El Nino year gives me concern that I don't think we can ever really take that off the table. That is to see, just to identify and recognize that we are a vulnerable community. And so the availability to use that water for the future, that is recycle that water, put it back into Whale Rock or put it into the ground and extract it again, is a very good and prudent course of action to take. We can conserve up to a point, and we've done pretty good in our community. I think we're actually one of the better communities in terms of our conservation, and I support all of you out there for that effort. But we have to recognize that going into the future, if we continue to sustain higher temperatures and less rainfall, then we remain vulnerable as a community. And so the idea of pursuing the direct or indirect potable reuse to surface water augmentation, put it in the ground, pull it out, whatever system we end up with. And right now, being where we are in the timing of all of this, because it's such a trendy topic at the legislature and around the country, we, because of our sole source of water and being a, let's call it a waterlocked community, perhaps that will bring us higher on the list for qualifying for grant monies. And I think that's something that we kind of need to pay attention to. Obviously, we're going probably leaning towards the indirect potable reuse, so using some of it for agriculture right away. And while we can do that while we're waiting for these other standards to be developed, but at the same time, we are going to be looking for those grant monies that would be available to our community as we speak. And the information that Rick just gave you, that we were granted a $75,000 grant for to offset our costs that we're incurring right now, that's beneficial. And so that shows that we're on the right path, that we're doing the right, taking the right course of action and evaluating the opportunities and options for our community. So I'd like to suggest that being early in this process maybe gives us a little bit better of a leg up on that grant funding for the ultimate cost. So if we were to just say we've got the option for the highest level of treatment at $34 million, if we got a $10 million grant, that would bring it back down to $24 million, which was our base cost for just doing straight tertiary treatment and then going to the outfall. So that's a high priority for this board, is really trying to seek the funding to offset the costs to the community. And remember, too, that this Cayucas, you as citizens, have been paying a little bit higher rates for the last 10 years, I think. And we have a little bit in the bank for this purpose, too. So we're going to have additional costs or additional funds to be able to offset the costs for the community. I hope that gives us a little bit better understanding of kind of where we're headed, and we're happy to answer questions as you come to the podium.
Thank you, Dan. Any other questions? I have just a couple. One for Dan Heimel. When you had your costs for the construction of the plant up there, I think you had $14 million. We haven't discussed what type of plant we'd build. I'm assuming that the type of treatment or the type of plant we build has different costs. And what did you use for your $14
million? Yeah, so that's a good question. So for those costs, for the $14 million is associated with tertiary treatment. And for this level of the analysis, the comparative analysis, we used a membrane bioreactor as a representative treatment technology to provide that required level of treatment. But, you know, as we move into the facility's master plan, we'll really dig into the different treatment options that are available for this plant. You know, there are a number of other technologies that will be evaluated and further analyze to really optimize what's the best treatment technology for this community while still making sure that it meets the level of treatment that's required.
So if I understand you correctly, there would be potentially be options that would could possibly cost a little less than the $14 million type of plant?
Potentially, yeah. There will be opportunities for optimization and, you know, there's other factors. There's O&M. Some technologies are easier to operate, maybe a little pricier. And so all of those considerations would go into the treatment evaluation portion of the facility's master plan to try to really, identify the technology that provides the benefit that's needed at the lowest cost.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Another question I had was you mentioned ag reuse, and we've had a lot of discussion about providing water for avocados, which appears to be the cash crop in this neighborhood. And it's my understanding that the avocados are very sensitive to salt, and tertiary water is not necessarily adequate to serve to water avocados with. Is there more money we need to spend to do that?
Yeah, and I mean, that's an additional level of analysis that we'll get into in the facility's master plan. But yeah, we didn't necessarily pick a specific crop type that and assume that we would be irrigating that. We made the assumption that we would be irrigating with tertiary water, which there are numerous crop types that can handle that level of salt. But, yeah, if we want to specialize it in working with the interested parties and identify that avocados are really the the target crop, then there could be some potential costs associated with the ag irrigation, the addition of some small-scale reverse osmosis to reduce the TDS to allow it to be suitable for avocados or some other similar crop.
Okay, there's one other question that I'd like to have clarified if we could. When you talked about costs of building the pipelines, I believe, David, you had a slide up here that had the line of the Coastal Commission jurisdiction. Could we somehow get back to that picture?
Rick, it might be easier on your end.
Just like at home.
It's gone to sleep. President Enns, I did want to emphasize something. The numbers you're seeing up there are strictly for comparison purposes, so you don't want to hone in too closely on those being the actual construction costs. They're likely to change, and getting those numbers this early in the process is particularly subject to faulty analysis. So they're really being used just for comparison purposes.
Okay. Thank you, Tim. And I recognize that if the cost to build a plant is $14 million in each of three sites, then that what we're saying is by comparing those would be the same. So thank you for that. Okay, here's the pink line. Is that the one that's the coastal boundary? And down here at the Toro Creek site, we have a pump station right at the corner of Highway 1 and Toro Creek, right in there. And we would have to get from there to Site 5. And I see that some of that is in the coastal zone. And also when you were talking about the cost of doing all that other pipeline work up and down the district to get to either Cayucas Creek or Willow Creek, all that work would be in the coastal zone, and we'd need Coastal Commission approval for that. And it looks to me like the Toro Creek site would give us the least amount of involvement with the Coastal Commission. And if anybody here has had the opportunity, Mr. Gibson, to work with the Coastal Commission, I think we understand what that means. So just some comments about that and what are opportunities and what are the pitfalls when we start to do these other projects.
I'll start that one anyway.
That's absolutely true. The infrastructure that's in the coastal zone that has any surface entry will require a coastal development permit, first through the county and ultimately likely to be appealed to the Coastal Commission. So the more intense the development within the zone, infrastructure-wise, piping, pump stations, the Cayugas Creek site, as you know, has far more intense infrastructure improvement requirements that would require permitting ultimately through the Coastal Commission, likely. And that's more expensive, and it's a component that has to be factored into costs.
And additionally, that's reflected in this slide. See where it says permitting complexity, construction complexity, operational complexity? That's why those numbers were weighted that way. So the ones occurring for Cayucas Creek are due to the length and the design, all the, you know, improvement plans that have to be done. So that's where that applies right in here.
I have another question, if I could, Robert.
Yes, certainly.
Either for Rick or for Dan, we talked about the sodium as it affects avocados as a crop. How much of an impact do our water softeners have on that level of sodium in the waste stream?
Well, speaking from experience. On-site self-regenerating water softeners where you add either sodium chloride, bags of salt, or potassium chloride, they do affect quite a bit the wastewater stream. They add quite a bit of chloride into the water, which affects the total dissolved solids that you have to filter out later on. Obviously, the best type of water softener is if it is in an exchange tank, and then it's taken away, and a new tank is put in. That does not go into the wastewater stream in our collection system. So
with respect to operation of the plant, whichever technology we end up landing on, would the removal of sodium make the system operate better, whichever technology we were to choose? Aside from the agricultural component, but really just about the ongoing O&M relative to the facility, does it have an impact?
So one of the reasons obviously you have water softeners is due to the hardness of your source water. And so with an advanced treatment process as envisioned for this project, it would include a reverse osmosis system. And so the advanced purified water from that would be then fed back into the community would have a lower TDS or hardness than the existing water, and thus could reduce the need for water softeners, thus reducing the additional load from the water softeners and overall benefiting the overall water quality.
That sounds like something to pay attention to. Thank you.
Any other questions from the board? At this time, I'm going to open the meeting to public comment. A couple things I'd like to say first. One is that there are some, thanks to Danielle, some cookies, some bottled water back there and coffee. And if you feel like getting up, and this might be a good time to do that. The other is that during public comment, our board has the assignment of listening to you. That means specifically that we're not going to respond while you're speaking. However, at the close of public comment, the board does have the opportunity to consider your questions, to ask staff for a response to your questions, at least understand what your concerns are before we make a decision. So I want you to understand that we're not going to respond. A gentleman back here had a question. We will take your question, and we'll see that it does get answered, but at least we'll understand what your question is. So at this time, I'd like to open it to public comment for anyone that wishes to ask a question, express an opinion. Please come to the microphone. Ron?
Hi. I'm Ron Wilson, and I had a couple of questions, so I guess we'll get the answers later. From what Dan said, it sounded like there was the offsetting cost with grants to going to the highest level of treatment and then recharging whale rock. But are those offset I mean, is it offsetting the treatment costs and the piping costs to do that? And then the second part is if we're recharging Whale Rock, it's my understanding that we share the water that's going in there is shared with other communities. And so are we charging it, or do we get full credit for what we do in what we were able to take out of Whale Rock, or are they getting a percentage of the total that we're putting in and bearing the cost of? Is that clear? Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Something I'd like you to do, if Ron, we know you're from Cayucas, if you would please let us know that you live here in Cayucas and you're going to be part of paying the bill for all this. So if you'd at least mention that when you come to the microphone.
Yes, and yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Rosalind Heathlett. I'm a resident of Cayucas. I pay $52 a month for my sewer bill that covers operations, treatment, and maintenance. What it does not include is the capital costs for implementing any of these alternatives. So the tertiary costs at $14 million, that would be just to treat the water, kind of what we're doing right now when we're sending our sewer to Morro Bay. And it just seems like, as a resident, that implementing the agriculture and the potable alternatives is the people in the service area are paying for that option. So as a resident, I'd be paying for the agriculture. And what is the rate that that agriculture would get, that they would have to pay for using that water? Would they have a capital cost that they have to pay for, or do they pay that through their rates and charges that are that get accumulated over time? So for every $1 million that the capital costs are, what does that mean to me as a ratepayer? How high does it increase my existing sewer bill? I think to make this cost analysis thorough would be to include what the cost would be to connect to Morro Bay as a customer. Right now, our average annual daily flows is about 2.6 or 2,600,000 gallons per day. And during a holiday like 4th of July, those flows goes up to 927,000 gallons per day. So the treatment capacity that you're showing here would have to cover those peak flows. And being a customer to Morro Bay, those it just seems like those would be better accommodated by a facility. So, and I am all for recycled water use. If we did connect to Morro Bay and wanted to analyze the recycled water use, what would that cost be to extend a recycled water pipeline from the Morro Bay treatment plant to the Whale Rock Reservoir? So those are my concerns, just to make the cost analysis thorough by including what the cost would be to connect to Morro Bay.
Thank you. Next speaker.
I'm Michael Foster. I live in Cayucas. First of all, thank you all for your work. Thank the advisors for your work. You know, I'm sure these will wind up costing more than what you project. They always do. You can never anticipate all of the costs. But I just did some quick math, assuming we have about 2,500 ratepayers. You divide that into $40 million, and I get $16,000 per ratepayer. Considering the quality of the new infrastructure that we're building and something that's going to last for 50 years, and as what Dan said, a backup supply of potential secondary water source, that seems like an awfully reasonable deal to me. And I'm going to be one of the ones paying for it. If $16,000 is something that's going to last as long as a wastewater treatment plant lasts, that's what, say, if it's 50 years, that's $300 a year, $320 a year. So when you actually break down what these costs are, they don't really seem like that much. That doesn't seem too expensive to me. But it does. Some of the same questions came to mind as the other speakers. If we're spending quite a bit of money to for this technology to recycle water, if it goes into whale rock, do we get the benefit of that recycled water? Similarly, it seems like we're looking at some of the same issues of Paso Robles. If we're recharging the groundwater here with our water, are we doing that for our agricultural neighbors who draw their water through pumps and aren't actually ratepayers of the district? So can we work out any kind of a system where they participate in some of the cost of the system itself, or maybe can we somehow bring them into the district itself? Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Good evening, Bill Martini. I live in Morro Bay, have a couple ranches right behind Cayucas. Site number two is actually right on our property line. Apparently it's a third option, and I was going to speak in case it went up a little higher why it was a poor site. And number one, yeah, exactly. It is visible from about a half a mile of Highway 1, which your analyst said it wasn't. But, I mean, if you go up on Highway 1, you look right down on it. And being our neighbor has 1,000 acres, and putting it right actually next to our property line didn't make sense, because they have other sites on that ranch that are totally hidden from Highway 1. But I'll get over to Toro Creek, because that appears to be your preferred site. And on Toro Creek, site number four, which was bounced off, actually is a much better site than site number five. There's areas on site number four on Toro Creek that are totally hidden from Toro Creek itself. It's very stable. I know they state that it was in an earthquake and a slide area, but there's rock formations there, and it's hidden. It's also closer to your pumping stations, and I know forced mains are anywhere from $1 to $3 million a mile for a forced main. So you might relook at site number four if you're choosing between the two, because as far as the community up Toro Creek, site number five would affect them a lot more. It's much more visible, and it's much closer to the homes further up Toro Creek. But just that comment. The other comment is that I spoke at the Coastal Commission meeting on Thursday about Morro Bay and Cayucas building two dueling sewer plants side by side, and they were shaking their heads. And I would not disagree with Cayucas building their sewer plant, but I think whether Morro Bay is your customer or you are Morro Bay's customer, it doesn't make sense to build two dueling sewer plants side by side. One thing that's not been taken into consideration is the operational costs. The current operational cost of this wastewater treatment plant, I believe, is around $800,000. If you build two plants side by side, your operational cost is not going to drop that much, but you'll have that double cost. So that's one of your savings. And you're absolutely right, getting back to site location, you are inside the coastal zone on some of your piping infrastructure. So no matter where you build, inside the coastal zone or outside, they will actually be overseeing it. And it's, that's just kind of the nature of the beast, so just to keep that in mind. And that, in turn, would be another reason why site number four would be closer to your Highway 1 and your infrastructure would be better. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Next.
Cheryl Conway, Cayucas, South Cayucas, go Willow Creek side. Anyway, just given the wonderful relationship that we've had with Morro Bay on the sewer issue, my first question is, do we have ownership of that outfall? Or is it subject to Morro Bay's whims on a given evening? Secondly, is what is the process going to be used for site selection? And, you know, thirdly, what is the timeline for that site selection? I assume it's all going to be public, but I want to make sure it's all publicized very well, so that we all have opportunities to get our neighbors in here for input before that decision is made. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Terry Paris, a 20-year resident here at Cayucas, live right here in town. I have a concern about the cost, the site cost of being $14 million. I know these costs are just used for comparison, but that cost seems to be low compared to what Morro Bay is planning on spending on their plant and the current plant that's being built in Los Osos. So they're quite a bit higher. I'm wondering if the $14 million is a product that's going to be not quite up to the standards that they're building those plants at. I know Mr. Kuhn in the first town meeting talked about building package plants that would save a lot of money, be able to be expedited, built real quick, a lot cheaper. But I don't think those kind of plants are would have the longevity of the plants that Los Osos is building, Morro Bay plans on building. So I just wanted to bring that up. So if they had to bring up the comparable cost with the Morro Bay plant and what their offer was for us to go in with them. Same thing I'm looking at as a rate player. I just want to keep my rates down and, you know, just keep those in consideration. Thanks.
Thank you, Terry. Anyone else?
Hi, Becky Barkley again. I'm a little concerned with the releasing of brine and the outfall. I know that as far as desal plants go, they really don't want the brine, so I'm not hearing any of your concern about that. So hopefully that's not an issue, but it's something I think we should look at. Thank you.
Thank you, Becky. Anyone else?
Rob Fisher, I live in Cayucas. I'd like to know if the presentation, the slides, if they'll be available to the public. I know that I also would like to know if there's any CSD liability for decommissioning the Morro Bay treatment plant. I know that doesn't affect the cost of the new plant, but and then I just wondered if there's been a comparison of the projected costs of treatment and between the Morro Bay and the Cayucas facilities.
Thanks. Thank you, Rob. Anyone else?
Mike Taylor, I live in Cayucas. I guess my question is, I realize that the Morro Bay plant is going to shut down at some point, and that's why we're building the new plant. But, and I'm not sure what Morro Bay's schedule is, but what is our schedule? And is there the possibility that Morro Bay would have the new plant operational before we have our plant operational, and therefore not quite sure what we do with our sewage?
All right. Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? All right, seeing no one else, I'm going to close public comment, bring the subject back to the board. We've heard a number of questions and thoughts from the public. I think some of them we've discussed over the period of time that we've been at this. Are there things that the board would like to have clarified?
Well, Mr. President, I think there's answers to almost every one of the questions that they've asked, and I think that's probably important to try to answer as many of those as possible. That's certainly my perception of this. I took some pretty good notes about the questions. I'm sure everybody else did, too. So if you think it would be prudent, I think we could do something that would get to the heart of many of the questions that were asked. So if you have a process that you'd like to jump on?
Well, why don't you go ahead and start, and if you've got the ones I've got here, I'll scratch mine off as we go.
Good. Let's try to do that. Let's start with Ron. Good evening, Ron. Nice to see you. It's always a treat. Okay, the cost for for piping or just what? Well, what can we get out of the treated water? Oh, good question relative to the water that we put into Whale Rock. Where is that going to go? How is it going to work? You might look at it, and I'm kind of free-forming here a little bit, and I can stand to be corrected, too. Okay, so this is a joint effort, but I'm just going to jump out there for you. It's a commodity. Let's just say we go ahead and put that water into Whale Rock. That just means that we're not going to be using as much of our allotment from Whale Rock. So technically we have a surplus. Two ways to deal with that. Store it, keep it for future use, which is sort of the piggy bank theory of water. But at the same time, if we're engaged in a high conservation mode, that water could be available for other communities. We essentially wheeled through the Whale Rock pipeline that goes to San Luis, and then it can go from there to other locations too. That water could also be extracted from Whale Rock for other emergency needs, whether it be agriculture like was being done in Morro Valley for the avocado farmers at that time. So the cost of piping, we've considered all the costs of piping, you know, if I could say that. I didn't get the second lady's name as I was writing down your comments here. Pays $52 a month for sewer, yeah. What will the ag user have to pay for water? That's kind of like, almost like a market issue. What is it worth to somebody to pay for water, let's an agriculturalist, and they want to put it on their avocados or their snap peas or whatever they're growing? The cost of the water will get to the point where it doesn't make any sense to plant the plant. So I wouldn't expect to get full reimbursement, although we will be looking at that, for the full cost of that. And you might call that an opportunity cost for having that water available for us for use later when it's, because it's treated to a higher level. So I'm not quite so sure. We don't have the full analysis of that, but you can fully believe that water could become too expensive for agriculture to be utilized. What it would do, it probably just offset some of our cost, and I could stand to be corrected by any of these fine folks. Going on?
Let me make a suggestion here, Dan.
Yeah.
I think we're better off if we let our consultants and our staff answer some of these questions. If we could direct the question, your questions to our staff.
Good idea.
That might help.
Good. I've got the next one then. From that lady, what is the cost to the ratepayer for $1 million in additional cost of our system?
We did a study long ago. For every $1 million we borrow, it's about a $2.50 increase at a 4% rate.
Per month?
Per month.
Okay.
Per ratepayer.
Okay.
So it would be for every $1 million we borrow is added $2.50 to your monthly bill.
Do you have any information on the cost to join the Morro Bay system?
No. We have an estimated cost that we were given long ago of $100 million, which they want 30% from us of that $100 million.
And that's so, if the $100 million is still a viable cost.
Once they determine where they're going and get farther along, I think in answer to the one question in comparing costs of Cayucas with going to Morro Bay, we both have to proceed on our facilities master plan. We have to identify technologies, whether it's a package plant, look at the longevity between a package plant or an aux ditch or an MBR system. These are the things that are to come out as we proceed forward on our studies.
I'm looking at some of these questions, and they're some of the repeated questions, too.
So another one would be, do we have ownership of the outfall? We have 35% ownership of the outfall.
Timeline for construction versus Morro Bay?
What's that? Say that.
Timeline of for construction versus Morro Bay's perceived timeline?
Well, our studies, we feel we've caught up to Morro Bay right now where we're at. And obviously in the construction, we would construct a smaller plant, which would go faster. So we think we're going to be ahead.
So in answer to the person's question, will we be done, then you're saying that into the affirmative that we would probably be done before Morro Bay would
correct
be done. Brine outfall.
Dan, you want to address the brine would come out of an RO plant versus the salinity of the ocean?
Yeah, definitely. So while there is significant concern about the brine discharge from a desal plant, especially a desal plant that's intaking seawater as its source water, that's significantly higher in concentration than the brine discharge that you would see from a recycled water system. And sort of the math goes that TDS on the high end for wastewater is about 1,000 parts per million. And you run it through an RO system and you concentrate it 10 times. So you end up with an effluent stream that's about 10,000 parts per million. Seawater is about 32,000 parts per million. So the concentration of the brine that you're discharging is still well below the existing concentration of the seawater. And so therefore it doesn't have the impacts that you normally hear about associated with brine discharge from salt water or seawater desalination plants. So it's, you know, we've reviewed the latest ocean plan guidelines for brine discharges and feel that won't be a serious concern by the regulators.
Presentations, the slides, availability of the presentation today, would we have that on our website?
We will be putting it on our website.
Okay.
And then I think the same thing was a CSD liability for we do have liability in decommissioning the existing facility. Morro Bay is looking at it through their facilities master plan, and we are going to look at it through ours and kind of hash out the decommissioning process.
Pretty much sums up my questions. Thank you.
Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, did you get Terry's on the package plan and the $14 million and what that would cover in relation to the different options?
Yeah, we're going to be looking at that through the facilities master plan, and again, it's going to be a longevity. I think it's important that in the project charter and discussions with the board, we've always approached this of keeping as many options open as possible, not only in the construction of a plant, but also in the future use of the plant out 30 years. So we've done that all the way through. As we get through the facilities master plan, we will be trying to fine-tune that with the board, technologies, longevity, operational costs. And so, again, as we work through the facilities master plan, have the board in these different sections of the master plan to point us in the right direction of to consider all those things. So,
Gary, or did you have some more questions, Dan?
No, I'm good.
Gary,
if I may, there was one question about talking about picking a site and when that was going to be done. That is the next agenda item tonight.
Thank you, Rick.
President Enns, can I just interject real briefly?
Say that again, Tim.
Can I interject real briefly?
Please do. Yeah.
The first question that we were tackling was related to, or maybe it was the second, can we get the water into Whale Rock? And that question raises a whole bunch of really interesting issues. Today, you couldn't put that water in Whale Rock. The regulations don't exist. They're being drafted, and it's anticipated that by about 2018, 2019, you'll have regulations addressing surface water augmentation, where we'll be able to theoretically put water into Whale Rock. The Whale Rock issue in and of itself is a difficult issue because there's a Whale Rock Commission. We're not members of it. It's owned by the City of San Luis Obispo, by CMC, by a whole bunch of members that would have to essentially approve this through negotiations. But it raises a bigger issue, and that is, what levels of treatment are we going to be paying for, and how are we going to be responding to them? What are our ratepayers going to be paying for? If it was today, there's only regulations for a small amount of reuse, and the regulations are being built incrementally, and I think we'll be responding to those regulations and phasing in much of our beneficial reuse components based on those regulations and based on those costs. It's not anticipated that today we're going to construct a plant that'll be surface water augmentation ready, because the regulations don't exist and the financing would be extreme. So I think it needs to be made clear that there's no clear picture of how we're going to do this reuse component, because the regulations don't exist. And we're going to have to be responding to these regulations as they come on the books, and looking at them and looking at the costs, and then determining whether or not we're going to implement them, whether that's indirect reuse, whether that's direct reuse, whether it's toilet to tap, so to speak. Those are all pretty far out there at this point in time. So we'll be responding to regulatory requirements as they're put on the books. And it's really hard at this point in time for us to basically put a footprint on what we're going to end up having out there. It may be that we make modifications 10, 20 years out as the technologies become cheaper and the regulations become more refined. And that sort of sliding scale, I think it's really important to understand it's a phased process. We're not going to be slamming up a $40 million plant today, because we really don't have the regulations in place to do that. And I just wanted to get that out there and make it clear, and particularly the Whale Rock issue, because that's going to be an interesting negotiation. We've talked about it many times at the board level. Nothing's guaranteed. So I just wanted to sort of color the discussion with those comments.
Thank you, Tim. Before we proceed to the next item, which will actually be the site selection, I would like to ask Supervisor Gibson if he has any comments he'd like to make at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Enns, and thank you, Mr. Carmel. You may have seen me in animated conversation with your counsel here, and I appreciate his indulgence and your own. For the record, I am Bruce Gibson, your county supervisor, also a ratepayer of the Cayuga Sanitary District, $52 every month taken directly out of my checking account, and I'm happy to do this. I've been in, I wish I could sort of turn around and address the audience. I've been in conversation with members of your board and your staff over many months, and very much appreciate the care that they're taking moving logically forward through this. But that was the conversation, what Tim just related was the conversation we had. And if I could just amplify slightly, if we could get to the slide that had your comparative cost estimates, I would make just a couple of comments right now. First of all, is in another slide, there was the fine print. Always beware of the fine print. The estimate of $14 million is a comparative number, and these are there. I think your board has exercised great prudence in being very careful about identifying the uncertainties in numbers, because when we come to one of these presentations, our takeaway is usually the number. But the point that I made to Tim right now is that if you look on the disposal to the outfall today, if you were to build your plant and let's say it cost what it says it costs there at the Toro Creek Site 5, the regulations only require you to redirect that treated effluent to the outfall. That's all it's required today. We can expect that in coming years, regulations regarding wastewater treatment are going to get more stringent, are going to be required. Reuse is going to be required at a higher level. And so what, for the audience benefit, what I think your board has done very well is to identify the necessary phasing that you might very well face as regulations evolve. Two kinds of regulation: one that mandates that your sewer plant treat to a certain level, and a second one that allows you to do things. And so I think the bottom line is that the analysis that you've are about to undertake is going to look into all of these things and come up with what makes the most sense for the ratepayers of the Cayuga Sanitary District. And again, I thank you for your indulgence, and I look forward to continuing to work with you on this project.
Thank you, Supervisor Gibson. And thank you for your time and meeting with us and helping us guide us through this process. Appreciate it. With that, we will go to item number 6, discussion and selection of the preferred site. And I'm going to ask Rick to give us a little summary, if you would, and your thoughts.
So to go back and summarize all that we've had been presented tonight, we were first given the qualitative non-economic scoring of the three sites. As you see here, Cayucas Creek was rated, scored at 9, Willow Creek 11, Toro Creek Valley at 14. Then we talked about the disposal to the outfall, the capital cost of getting the sewer there. You can see going to the north of Cayucas, because we have to put in more feet of pipeline, it's $40 million, $31 million at Willow Creek, and Toro Creek Valley, $25 million roughly. Then we added in the ag irrigation costs to help dispose of some of the water. And wherever we went, there was plenty of room on adjacent sites, if not more, within the valleys of each of the locations. So it's just equal to $1.4 million. Then now looking towards the future, keeping our options open, as we discussed before, you have the potable reuse component. And this is where it became interesting, is you can see that the Cayucas Creek is, you know, 6.6 to 8.0, and that Willow Creek is 5.8 to 7.8, and then Toro Creek is actually higher at 8 million to 8.6 million. So this is directly related to the beneficial uses. Where would we put the water in the future? Well, Willow Creek is centrally located. It's closer to the beneficial use of putting it in the below the dam, and then taking it out. It's closer to the water treatment facility, which is centrally located. It's also the closest to Whale Rock if surface water augmentation ever became a possibility. So you can see here that looking in the future, Willow Creek is a better alternative or cheaper alternative. Here's the total project cost. So the total project cost of Cayucas Valley is about $4.9 million. Willow Creek, $49 million. Willow Creek, $39 million. And then Toro Creek at about $33 million or so. Now, again, these costs, this is a representative treatment plant cost of $14 million. It was an MBR type. This is a higher-end type facility long-term. There are other alternatives that we're going to pursue. But again, the important thing in this is the difference between the short-term construction of it. Toro Creek comes out as the lease cost, and then looking at the long-term options. Again, we've said it many times tonight that the grant funding is made available in the long-term direct potable reuse. This is, again, you can have 35%, there's one grant out there, 35% of total project costs up to $15 million. So if you look at that idea, the Willow Creek site long-term for that possibility now becomes a leading contender in the whole thing. And again, like legal counsel said, Tim said, it's all phased. This is all phased. You know, we're looking at short-term building, short-term having to adjust our collection systems, and then being able to add the long-term options to it as regulations change and requirements change. So that gets us down to the bottom line here. The project team, in looking at and evaluating all these, we feel that moving forward, that we should kind of suspend or put in our back pocket the Cayucas Creek alternative and then look to pursue the two alternatives, so Willow Creek and then Toro Creek Valley, with Toro Creek Valley, Toro Creek option being the preferred alternative at this time. So that's really what we have to do a quick summary.
Okay, any other questions of staff, including WSC and Firma?
Yes, please.
Please proceed.
So are these the two alternatives? If we were to choose the ones that staff has identified as pursuing, which would be Willow Creek and Toro Creek, are those the two sites that would be evaluated in an EIR? And the third site, Cayucas Creek, would not?
You're allowed to, you have to identify a proposed project, and then you're allowed to evaluate as many reasonable alternatives as you choose. My thinking at this point is that one alternative at Willow Creek would be adequate. All of the sites have very similar characteristics. There are minor environmental distinguishing factors among them, but given the disparity in the cost for the Cayucas Creek site, it may not need to be analyzed as a second alternative.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Okay.
Robert, I take
that. Yes, please.
So in the facilities master plan, which is the next step, will we be evaluating the two sites, Willow and Toro, side by side? Or are we just going to say facilities master plan is everything but the dirt?
If you pick Toro as a preferred alternative, we'll probably start evaluating that. I think it's important that while that's starting and looking, the facilities master plan is looking at technologies, there's also another parallel path that has to be done, which is actually talking to the landowner. And it's very important in our project charter. One of the main goals in that project charter was to work with the landowner, what their vision is, how they see it fitting in with their future operations. And that's kind of why we're pursuing two, is to be able to open those discussions and seeing what they have and having those discussions over the next couple of months and then coming back to the board and then seeing how that would fit in with a sewer facility, a reprocessing reclamation facility. So the facilities master plan will like to focus on one, but now and over the next couple of months is start talking to the landowners that you choose.
And one final question. When do you think we'll be coming back to the community again in a meeting like this to discuss the next?
Probably when we get into the facilities master plan with the technology types, and we'll present to the board the different options, get a little farther along, like in the first phase of the master plan. So I would envision, this is February, March, June, something like that, maybe. Okay. We're going to start in March, April, May, June, something. Yeah. Right.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? If not, then I'm going to reopen this for public comment. You can, I think, see where we are. You've seen everything that the board has seen. It's up to this board of directors to make a final site selection, which we'll do here in a few moments. But this is the public's opportunity to make any additional comments.
Hi, I'm Ted Vandenhoevel. I live up Montecito Road, right next to one of the proposed sites. Has anybody considered using the existing pipelines from the Chevron facility to pump water back uphill and then gravity feed into Whale Rock and further pump it out to its terminus? I think that's San Ardo, isn't it? Is there been any discussion of that or pursuit of it? It would cut out a whole pipeline that you guys have allocated millions of dollars to build, and it's out of also out of the Coastal Commission. So that would be the most important thing. And then, to what level is this plant going to treat specifically? Is it strictly for ag use, or would it be cut off below that effluent discharge? That's it.
Thank you, Teal.
Good evening, Bill Martin again. I think I'll just follow up on that comment real quick, because that pipeline runs across our property, and the easement from San Ardo over does not allow that. In other words, it's strictly for oil, and it's controlled, so you'd need the consent of every landowner between here and San Ardo to do something of that nature. Good idea, but the easement currently wouldn't allow that. And again, I would recommend to look at site number 4 up Toro Creek, not to just strictly stick with 5, because I think if you actually go on site and look at it, you'll maybe find out that it's superior. So just the other thought. Thanks.
Thank you, Bill. Anyone else? Teo, do you want to come up and so the rest of the public could hear your excellent comment?
I'm not trying to be argumentative, but as a point of making it economically viable for the community, and that I like the Toro Creek sites, if you allow property owners that the pipeline runs through, including me, to tap into that line to irrigate whatever they want to irrigate, that might be a heck of an incentive to indeed use that water all the way out to at least part of its terminus, if not along the way. And there's always the economic incentive. The oil company came to many property owners about 25 years ago, and they paid quite a share of money to everybody to have access to their line for maintenance and other things. And that's, again, simply a matter of economics.
Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing none, does the staff have any comments based on the two public comments?
I think in the facilities master plan, we will be looking at all, if there's pipelines out there, what to use. But it is anticipated that if we are focusing on any one of the valleys, that the ag irrigation pipeline, we would talk to the other people within the valley and see what the, you know, the intended use could be for that type of reclaimed water. And the plant would process to tertiary is what we decided in the project, the board wanted in the project charter. So I think I got all the...
If I can add to that, we'll start with tertiary, but again, it's a phased process dependent on regulations and funding.
Your broken record.
It really is. We start with tertiary, but obviously we're looking way out into the future here. And in 15 years, I'll bet you we're not only treating to tertiary levels.
Thank you, Tim.
I have a question, Robert.
Yes.
Maybe this would be for David. Relative to Bill Martoni's comment regarding Site 4, can you characterize the soil and or fault issue, as well as I thought that our needs might be greater in terms of area than might be available up that draw on Site 4?
Certainly. The geologist did not indicate that the
David,
fault... Yes, I'm sorry.
Could we get that a picture of... Site 4 and 5
up
there.
If we could, let's. Who has the control? The two sites that are in question are quite near each other along Toro Creek Road. They're within a quarter mile or half mile of one another. One of them is on a flat alluvial plain. It's prime ag land. That's Site 5. Site 4 was evaluated by the geologist, and he did not characterize the fault or the landslide as a fatal flaw. It's not an insurmountable constraint. Okay, there's Site 5. Site number 4 would be near the bottom of that slide, right? Rick knows where it is.
Yeah, if I may, when we started talking this process, we started talking to Chevron, they actually... did an evaluation of several sites on their property, and they came up with these sites as ranking the better of the where they want us to be. Site 5 is right here. Site 4 is this area right here. And you can see this mass that's right there, that was identified as the landslide. So over years, this piece of earth used to be up here on this hillside. So Site 4, in talking with the landowner, it was down in this portion right here. So the landslide itself is not insurmountable in the grading and the earth moving, but it is a lot more work. Putting it up in these areas were not good because of the view from the highway up on the hillside. So being down in this area is where Site 4 is.
It also looks like there's a drainage running through Site 4 that would come right down through the area.
And that follows kind of the old fault line, believe it or not, down right through this area, right through here.
Okay, so it doesn't look like an ideal site.
Yeah.
Okay. Hence your recommendation.
Yeah. That's why we dropped it out as we kept going along this process.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, seeing none, I would like to comment that we're missing one board member here. Shirley Lyon is not with us tonight. She fell and broke her ankle a couple weeks ago. And she was in the hospital and had then gone to a rehab facility from which we promised to carry her to this meeting tonight. And she cleverly escaped back to the hospital, unfortunately, and is not here tonight. But we did have our manager communicate with her, go over the presentation tonight. What she will be missing is the public comment from this evening. She has, however, had an opportunity to go through all of these slides with Rick. So she has written a note to me that says, "In my absence, please read this on my behalf at the February 18th, 2016 board meeting. Sorry I can't be here tonight. As you know, I have participated in all previous meetings that have led up to tonight's presentation by WSC and Firma. And I've had the opportunity to preview all material that has been presented this evening. absent any new relevant information presented during the February 18th board meeting, that's tonight, it is my opinion that we follow the project team's recommendation to pursue the Toro Creek site and the Willow Creek site, with Toro Creek site being the preferred site. I look forward to continue to work with our staff and consultants as we move forward. And with that, I'll open it up to any other additional board comments. If not, a motion would be in order for site selection.
I move that we accept staff's recommendation for moving forward with site at Willow Creek and Toro Creek.
Oh, let me make a comment here before Dan. Go ahead.
I'll second.
Okay, motion and second. Any discussion? There was a comment here from Shirley to pursue Toro Creek as the preferred site. Would you care to make that part of your motion?
I'll amend my motion to recognize Toro Creek as the preferred site alternative.
Okay, is the amendment acceptable to the second?
Yes. Yes.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion at the board? Seeing none, I'll ask for a roll call vote. Danielle, please.
Director Lloyd?
Yes. Sounds like a lion.
Vice President Chivins?
Yes.
Director Maffioli?
Yes.
And President Enns?
Yes.
Thank you.
So with that, we've selected a site, and we're excited to move forward. Rick, thank you. And I'd like to ask Rick to give us, just go back to the last slides and talk about what's going to happen next, and focus on Dan's comment about when can you expect to see us again.
So these are the next steps: facility master plan, and then the environmental impact report. At the same time, we'll start opening up negotiations with the property owners.
Okay, and we expect to meet, say, sometime around June?
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
So I will, with the board's permission, skip item 7 and go to item 8 and ask for a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
It's your turn. Motion second. We're adjourned. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.